Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're excited to welcome the program. I know I have my next guest ready to go on the line. I'm excited to welcome the program celebrity, Jillian Michaels. Jillian, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Fantastic. Impromptu. I heard you get on the line, so I'm excited. We're promoting again Just Jillian on E! And I know you're just so excited about this project, aren't you, and how we're finally getting to learn more and more about who Jillian is.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, that is the hope, right, is that the bigger message, despite, you know, what may have been seen on The Biggest Loser, is that it's not just about weight loss. We lose weight or we subsequently get healthy to help empower us in every facet of our lives. And I think one of the best ways to talk about how we live our best life is to let people in to see me struggle to do exactly that. And, of course, I'm not an expert in these areas of parenting or relationships, so there are a lot of things that go wrong, and it's funny and hopefully relatable, and maybe you take a few things away at the end of it.
Oh, definitely, and it's something that you're able to see who you are. We saw you, in The Biggest Loser. We saw you in other shows, and you're training people, and you're working them so hard, and you're motivating people so much, but who's Jillian when the cameras are off? What does she do when she gets home during the day?
Yeah. I mean, on in my head, no, right? They happen to be on in this situation.
Yeah, but meaning that's what we want to know. That's what the audience wants to know, yeah.
Yeah, like when I'm stepping out of my professional role, honestly, my life is big. It exists in a public arena, but I struggle with the same things everyone else struggles with. And people say, they're like, well, what's the show? And I like to say, okay, take your life over the course of a week, and I want you to pull the most ridiculous, chaotic, insane, hilarious 44 minutes. That's the show. And they're like, well, is it about your family? And it's like, look at your life, look at your work, look at your family, look at your friends, look at your relationships, and tell me, where do the problems crop up? Well, in every area, all the time, spontaneously, things go wrong. They call it Murphy's Law for a reason. What can't go wrong will go wrong.
Yes.
It's funny, it's heartfelt, and the hope is that, it normalizes things for people in a way that's very entertaining. Because if I've been given all this opportunity in life, and I'm having, failures, setbacks, rejections, I'm dropping balls
right,
left
exactly.
And right, you know, when I drop the ball, it's a boulder, but, people are laughing, and they're relating, and that's the goal, is to just say, look, I don't think there is a perfect answer. I don't think there is a perfect solution. So it's about having fun along the way. It's about the journey.
I'm glad you say this, Jillian, because, again, people think celebrities' lives are just, perfect, and by you showing this, isn't that a crock? I wish I could live this life where, you have an assistant doing everything for you, or you get yourself really into what life and family life is. There you go. And that's what you wanted with this show. And it portrays your family. It lets you know about family life. It lets you know how hard it is to run a brand and a business, the brand of Jillian Michaels and how much work.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. I mean, it's just, at the end of the day, I love how Seinfeld was like, oh, it's a show about nothing, because there wasn't, one specific theme that they hammered over and over again. It was about the minutiae of
right.
everyday life. And I like to say it's a show about everything, which is everything and anything that can happen. As human beings, as people, kind of endeavoring to improve. And again, my life is, I'm a public figure, so you're going to see things go wrong against big backdrops, whether it's the Video Music Awards
right.
or a magazine cover shoot, but things go wrong. Or it could just be, my son's being bullied in school, and Heidi and I have very different parenting styles.
Oh, yeah. That's
which, of course, some of the differences in our dynamics make the relationship really work, but some of them also create a host of ridiculous issues. And I mean, there's any couple that I talk to.
Yes.
Struggles with the same stuff.
Oh, trust me. I have 5 kids of my own, Jillian, and my wife's a kindergarten teacher, and I'm the entrepreneur that's doing, I own a tutoring consulting company, do all these different things, but I'm kind of like the Mr. Mom in certain ways, going out and getting them to places because my wife's teaching. And then so we have that perspective as well when the couples get together and decide, well, what are we going to do next? And, well, I don't want to offend, but you're probably like, I don't want my kids to be bullied. So it's such a variety, and that's what's the spice of life in a relationship, Jillian, and that's what you're showing is that you got to be different in certain ways. We can't be equal, carbon copies of each other, correct?
I would kill me if I was dating me. I could never date. But you know, but then there are those moments where you're like, oh, this is, you know, Heidi is the calm in the storm. Heidi is the cool head. But then there are moments when, you know, you're trying to handle a situation and you're disagreeing about how to handle it. And it's like my son comes home in the 7th episode and he's got a cut down his face like Bruce Lee in Enter the Dragon. And you know, we've had this ongoing issue with this one kid. And I'm like, that's it. We're going to karate. I've had it. So we're just throw this kid through the wall. And, you know, she's like, no, we need to set up a play date. And, you know, and we're having this huge disagreement over how to handle it. And it's just, it's absurd. But you'll have to kind of see how it plays out. And I don't know anybody who hasn't had that disagreement with their significant other.
Well, I think that what made you so successful on The Biggest Loser was how personable you were with people, how you motivated people, but also everyone thought they could be you in certain ways. And that's why my wife was so motivated by you on the show and different things and working out and how intense you were and how caring you were. And to see the real person behind what you did and the empire you've developed through your workout videos and everything, and now to finally see what's happening is really cool. I'm going to make sure for sure it goes on my list of shows to watch for sure, Jillian. And my wife and I will be watching that for sure. And we'll be tweeting it out and all those different things. Again, Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, the show airs, and I'm sure it airs various times on E! Do you have anything else that's going on really quick to promote? I know we can go to your website's the best place, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, myself and my business partner, Giancarlo, who's on the show, you know, we're in a million different things. And, I mean, you'll see it all on the show. But, yeah, it's chaos in a great way.
Exactly. And we can follow you on Twitter. Where are the best places we can find info on you, Jillian?
Twitter, Jillian Michaels on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or even my website, JillianMichaels.com.
Well, I can't wait to watch the show. Thanks for coming on. And it really is something I think we need to know is what life is not a bed of roses for everyone, especially even celebrities. And we'll get to see what you do on a daily basis. So thanks for calling and best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Take care. All right. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google+, and also on Periscope, at TotalTutor. And I'm so excited to talk to these guys. First time ever, I checked out their YouTube. All my friends said, you've not watched these guys? They're so popular, and we're promoting season 5, so I'm excited to welcome the program. From True TV's Impractical Jokers, Joe Gatto and James Murray. Joe and James, thanks for calling. How are you?
Hey, man, how are you? I'm great, thanks.
We're doing fantastic. And Joe, you know, when I look at this show, it reminds me back in the day in a little bit of kind of things of the way that what was popular in the 90s and 80s and you know, practical jokes and pranking. I was a huge fan of the Jerky Boys growing up and stuff like that, Joe. Did you get any influence from people like that?
Yeah, we definitely had, you know, influences and laughed at all that same stuff, too, even back to Candid Camera and all that. You know, it's just fun to watch that type of humor. And our take on it was, instead of embarrassing the public, we would embarrass ourselves in front of the public.
Right. Now, that's I think that takes on a better role, doesn't it, James? That, you know, instead of you're embarrassing other people, we all prank called people back in the day when there was no caller ID and, you know, called different pizza joints or did different things or made funny jokes. But yet now the way that the success of your show is you're basically making fun of yourself for sure, James.
Yeah, you know, I think it's the charm of the show. And, you know, when people watch a hidden camera show, they get uncomfortable. They feel bad for the person getting pranked. But when we're the ones pranking each other, you know, we're willing participants. There's no harm. It's just we're the ones getting harmed, not you.
Definitely. And so, Joe, you're a big fan of even Candom Camera. That's interesting. So growing up, you liked that show as well and liked just watching different things, and probably Benny Hill and things like that were an influence for you?
Yeah, of course, Benny Hill, you know, Alan Fonto, all that was really just stuff that was on in the household. And you laughed at it. You know, my parents watching it and growing up with them and watching it with them.
Now, James, tell me the conceptual idea that you guys came up with this whole show. Now, this being season 5 and stuff, how you came up with this idea?
Well, we're a comedy troupe called The Tenderloin. We've been best friends for a long time. We've been working together for a long time. And we had a couple of failed pilots on other networks before Jokers. And we noticed that a lot of hidden camera shows are selling. So we're like, well, let's see if we can come up with our twist on it. So we spun the upside down and made the joke on us instead of on the public. And really, the show is about our friendship more than anything. It's kind of like our friendship on display. And we've been doing these kind of pranks on each other and just embarrassing each other our whole lives. So we finally found like a format that kind of showcases that friendship. And I think that's why people stick to the idea.
Oh, I think they do, and I was watching the Best of 10, and I was laughing my butt off. I said, I couldn't imagine being with you guys and then having you guys call me out and say, go ahead and do this or do that. I could just imagine. I'm 6'10", by the way, Joe, and I know you'd figure out some sort of joke for me to do, wouldn't you?
The crowd.
What were you going to say, Joe?
I think the good thing about us is that we're all average and forgettable. So that helps us hide in the crowd.
Yeah. I couldn't hide in any crowd. All right. So, again, want to talk about tonight, Thursday night's episode. Again, 9 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, season 5's premiere. So, Joe, basically some interesting storylines, especially the that you have for the show coming up on Thursday night, don't you?
Yeah. We finally, I had thought of this punishment about 4 or 5 months ago, and I've been trying to get it to happen, and finally in the premiere of season 5 we're able to do it, and it wasn't super easy to pull off because it involved a helicopter, but it all panned out.
No, definitely, and that sounds scary, whoever's going to lose this, right, James?
Yeah, because I was the one who lost it along with that. So there you go. So it was terrifying. You just put two of us on the helicopter, but only one seat inside, so one of us had to ride outside the helicopter on the barge.
So you're just trying to top that, right, Joe? And I'm sure you're laughing and saying, this is the perfect idea. How did you come up with this helicopter idea, Joe?
You know, it's when you spend enough time sitting down thinking about how to torture your best friends, all the craziness pops into your head. And our production team has gotten so good at it at the show that I basically just said, hey, do you guys think we can get a helicopter? And they're like, let us look into it. And then the producer called me up and was like, hey, we got a helicopter you wanted. And I was like, okay.
They ordered it off Amazon.
Yeah, we got it for a Prime member, so it worked out nice.
Oh, my. I would be fearful for sure for that idea and how your creative team meetings, James, and coming up with what can we top next. That's the biggest problem, right? It's what you can top next every season. There's new stuff to get people to laugh, and how do you come up with all of it when you've done a lot of it, right, James?
Well, you know, I think we were worried about that in season 1, but what we came to realize is that there's so much history that we shared together. We just keep pulling from this endless well of embarrassing stories and photos, and you know, we just know everything about each other, so that's where we keep coming up with new material. But also, we work hard at reinventing the format. So, like this season, we're doing destination punishments for the first time ever, where we'll travel just for the punishment to the Grand Canyon, or to the space station, or to somewhere absurd thousands of miles away to punish the loser.
All right, so basically, Joe, again, you're going to be at two places, a receptionist's and then office waiting room, which we can't stand, and a wax museum. So two different things. Don't want to spoil anything, right, Joe, for Thursday night, do you?
Yeah, but they're definitely two very different feels. One is amongst the crowd in the Madame Tussauds Wax Museum here in Times Square, which is a lot of fun to get in there and mess around with that museum. And the other one's a really quiet reception area, so you get to see a whole range of embarrassment.
So, James, some really fun shows this season to stay tuned. Don't with through your social media and stuff to find out what's coming up next, right, James?
Yep, you can go go to thetenderloins.com for all things the Tenderloins related, or impracticaljokes.com for all things show related as well.
That's awesome. And Joe, how many seasons do you hope to do the show? Do you guys hope to do it for a long time to come?
Nine.
Nine?
Nine would be the magic number. I think nine is perfect. It's not 10. We still have single digits. Nine is the right number.
You're not thinking about 20 or 30 or when you guys are like 70 or 80 years old?
No. Let's not get crazy. Nine is perfect.
Nine is perfect. And then what do you move on to next then after that, Joe?
Well,
season one of Impractical Jokers. Let's do it again.
The reunion show.
All right, best place to find information. We already found all that stuff out again. And remember, guys, for everyone to tune in Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central to True TV's. Going to be a really, really interesting show. Impractical Jokers. Take care, guys. And I wouldn't want to be on that helicopter ride.
Thanks so much.
All right, take care, guys. See you later. All right, bye-bye. Okay, bye. All right, that was the Total Celebrity Show. Take care, everybody.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, Tolter.net, for more information. Twitter, Tolter, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Tolter, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+, and also on Periscope, at Total Tutor. And I'm excited to welcome my guest on the line. I had my co-host, Coach Karen Hall, on the line, and her phone dropped, but I'm just absolutely honored to welcome the program, former Pitt basketball star and coach of the Arizona Wildcats, Sean Miller. Sean, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm doing well. How's everything in Pittsburgh?
Everything is fantastic in Pittsburgh. And if anybody, and I'm just going to be waiting for Coach to call in, so I'll go in with some of the best questions I would ask, an impromptu questions for Sean. I remember, again, the team, 1987. You know, you talk about the Panthers, but we do have my co-host, Coach Karen Hall, on the line. So I'm excited to welcome the program, Coach Karen Hall. Coach, you bounced off, but we do have Sean on the line. So you can introduce a little bit more. I've already introduced him, so we can get up right into the first question for him.
Okay. Well, Sean, how are you today? Welcome to our show.
Yeah, Karen, good to hear your voice. I hope everything's going well.
Yeah, thanks. Same to you. I think the last time I've seen you, you were at Xavier. So you've really come around since that time. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, I want to get right into it, Sean. I want to start with, your ball handling skills and kind of work your way in what it was like to play for your father. That must be such a wonderful relationship to have your dad on the sidelines as your coach. So can you take us from that time?
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think all of us, to a very large extent, are a product of, you know, how we grew up, you know, who our parents were, you know, how our family structure was, the community we grew up in, and, you know, obviously the schools that we attended. And in my case, you know, my very fortunate to have two great parents and, you know, my dad being the basketball coach that he is and still is, and the passion and love for the game of basketball that he had, you know, it was very contagious in my house. So I grew up loving the game of basketball, and, you know, he spent an amazing amount of time with me growing up. Every time that he would go and become the coach of his high school, he was both the coach of his high school team and had his son around. You know, I seemed to always be around him. Which, looking back, you know, that was the greatest gift that he gave me, and me learning the game, you know, being around so many different types of people, and then obviously having the luxury of having what I think is one of the great teachers of the game as my dad. And, you know, I grew up with the ball in my hand, and obviously a big reason why I'm a coach today.
Would you say, Sean, basically from wanting to grow up with the ball in your hand is just trying to emulate your father just from the beginning, kind of saying, I want to be like him, would you say? And saying,
yeah,
you know,
I think what he gave all of us, and, you know, my sister Lisa played at Elon College, you know, Arch, who you guys are familiar with, you know, he played at NC State and now is very successful as Dayton's coach. You know, he gave us the know-how, but also the love of the game. And, you know, you have to love what you do in life to be any type of success. And I think that we learned from him that if you have a passion towards something that you can really become good at it. And he's a great teacher, you know, obviously a tremendous parent, and we were all really lucky to play for him as well, because all three of us did, even my sister, he was our coach.
Right. You know, such a special relationship, and along with the basketball skills that your dad was teaching you all, also came with that was that leadership. So you were around him early, you know, on the court with him. But what about that leadership development as you watched your dad coach before you were of age to play for him and then later?
Well, you know, my dad also, you know, he is a great competitor. You know, everybody thinks they want to win. Like everything, some people want to win more than others. And he had that gene in him, you know, not only the love of the game of basketball, but, you know, in anything he did, he really competed. And, you know, I think that you learn at an early age to how to win and the importance of it in sports. And I think, you know, some of the things you're referring to being a leader stems from, you know, you really deep down caring about the outcome of the game, not just how you do as an individual, how many points you score, how much playing time you get in sports, but that the bottom line is, did you win the game or not? And, you know, at an early age, he was a stickler on, you know, if it's a shirts, skins game, pick up 3-on-3, 1-on-1, 5-on-5, outside, inside, it didn't matter. You know, he would always make a huge deal about, you have to know the score of the game. You know, it's your responsibility as a point guard, as a player in that pickup game, to know the score of the game. And, you know, if you think about that today, the way it's organized, very few kids even think about that. I swear I don't think I know the score when it's on the scoreboard sometimes.
Right.
I think that was a gift for us. And I mean, a lot of people in Western Pennsylvania, like myself, because of how important high school sports are and a great team of coaches, I think we all benefited from that.
Yes. Yes.
It definitely seems like, Coach, you definitely did benefit from it. Sean, and I think that the competitive urge and looking at the specifics, but what did you learn playing the game that really, I would say, probably is ball handling? Would you agree? That was something your dad really preached a lot, was ball handling, right? See, right off the bat to become a great ball
handler. He did. You know, basketball is a skilled game. If you look at Steph Curry, and, you know, who's maybe the game's greatest player right now. And
right.
It's just unique right now in the year 2016 to have somebody physically, you know, so normal. And not that he isn't
right
and talented, but, you know, his greatness lies in his ability to shoot and to handle the ball and pass it. And you know, that's what, you know, I think someone like my dad really always instilled, not just in his family, but in any player that played for him, the importance of being able to go to the foul line and convert 2 free throws, being an efficient player shooting the ball. You know, he spent a lot of time with Micah Mason, you know, at Duquesne. And I talked to my brother last night. You know, Dayton and Duquesne had a really tough game at Dayton last night. And, you know, my brother was raving about how skilled Micah is. And, you know, we both kind of laughed because, you know, all of the time that Micah, I think, spent with my dad and in a gym and learning, you know, there's a great example of when you become fundamentally sound and not just skilled but highly skilled, how you can become a really good basketball player. So I think anybody who's ever been around my dad benefits from his ability to be able to teach the fundamentals, passing, shooting, dribbling, and knowing that basketball is a skilled game.
You know, so we want to make sure that our listeners know that, you know, John Miller, who's your legendary dad, but legendary to the basketball world, is of Blackhawk High School. That's where you played, and that's where, you know, your dad did a lot of his crafting of all you players. And, I mean, I just want to make sure that's noted so we know who your dad is, but for all of our listeners, you know, we want to make sure they're insightful of Coach John Miller. So, and I mean, your ball handling was crafted very early, and I don't know if you get to talk about it too often these days, Sean, but this is a fun show. So, you know, how about that role in the Fist to Save Pittsburgh? I didn't even really know that. So what was that like? Do you remember?
Yeah, that was a long time ago. A lot of the things for me when I was young and you know, I think my ability to handle the basketball and dribble,
right.
You know, more than one and spin and all that, it was more of a product of how much time we spent in the gym. I mean,
okay.
In the summer months, you know, in grade school, junior high, I mean, it was hours. I mean, every day working to become a really good player. And it just so happened that in the route to become a really good player, I became an excellent ball handler and can do just about everything you could. And because of that, mm-hmm. I had some opportunities. But my quest back then was to try to be the best player I could be. And that's the difference. I think a lot of kids sometimes can handle two or three basketballs, juggle, and do those things, but
right.
they don't have the ability to take that skill level and put it into
the court.
And, you know, that was always our focus and my dad's focus and certainly mine.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring back also your dad had a video out, right, if I'm correct, Sean, back in the day, a coaching video about proper ball handling skills and different other skills. Am I correct?
Yes, I think it was Drill for Skill. At the time it came out, there was an elementary level, an intermediate level, and an advanced level. And I believe I was the demonstrator. And heck, that would have probably been when I was in high school the first time, and then maybe college. That was a long time ago.
I remember watching it, Sean. So. I remember watching in China as a big man trying to learn how to become better ball handler. So I remember it completely. So it definitely part of the day, just kind of, you know, reminiscing about these things is fantastic. And again, we're with Coach Sean Miller of the Arizona Wildcats. And Coach Hall, I'm already going to grab you. We got to talk Pitt. I know this is it.
I know.
MLB. We got to talk Pitt now, especially him choosing the University of Pittsburgh, because those Pitt memories for me watching Sean Miller play, what a great time. So, Coach, what question do you have next?
So, you know, we had Jason Matthews on, Sean, one of your favorite teammates, and he just raved about your leadership ability as a freshman to come in with some great players as seniors, Charles Mitchell and Wayne, but you know, being able to take over that point guard role. So, you know, what was that like coming into a culture such as Pitt as a freshman during that time?
Well, it was a big change, Karen. You know, looking back on it, I can't tell you how helpful that experience has been to, you know, life after the University of Pittsburgh. First of all, you know, the friendships and the teammates that I had, guys coming from everywhere, you know, all growing up differently. But, you know, you learn that one of the gifts as a college student athlete, especially at a very high level, is, you know, that all barriers are broken when you're on the same basketball team and you have a bond and a friendship that unless you've experienced it, you can't comprehend, you know, the feeling,
the
love that you have for those guys. When I came in, Demetrius Gore and Charles Smith, they embraced me. You know, they made me feel like they enjoyed playing with me, that they wanted to be my teammate. And, you know, I'll never forget that experience because when you leave a high school situation and you're thrust into that and those guys have been in college for 3 or 4 years and who they are, you know, they didn't have to do that. But because they did, you know, I'm forever grateful. But now those feelings are really with me any time that a freshman steps into our program, that anxiety you feel when it's your first time. And then the recruiting class that I came in to Pitt with, you know, Darrell Porter,
Jason
Matthews, Bobby Martin, Brian Shorter, we were at the time the number one recruiting class in the country. And, you know, John Calipari was our assistant coach, and he had a big hand in recruiting all of us. So, and we're still, you know, close to this day. You know, I feel bad that I don't communicate or we don't communicate sometimes more than we really do in terms of those guys and myself. But Jason has been out here. Bobby Martin has been out here a number of times. I actually talked to Charles Smith this past month, and He was talking about making a trip out here. Same with Curtis Akin. So
awesome.
I think the biggest thing, you know, with my time at Pitt is the friendships, the camaraderie, the lessons you learn, and the relationships you have when you leave. You know, Nate Bailey, a really good friend of mine. And where did we meet? We met at the University of Pittsburgh. You know, Darren Morningstar. I could keep going on and on. But
you can bring that list and hail the Pitt for sure, Coach Sean. Let's kind of go right when you talk about, I want to ask your greatest memory playing for the University of Pittsburgh. Greatest memory.
I would say would have been my freshman year when we won the Big East regular season championship. Mm-hmm. We actually clinched it in a Carrier Dome against Syracuse, an early March game on CBS. And I think at the time it would have been the largest crowd to see a game at the Carrier Dome. You know, the talent that was on that court is amazing. I mean, they had Ronnie Cicely and Derek Coleman.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sherman Douglas. I mean, unbelievable players. We had, obviously, Charles Smith, Jerome Lane, and our crew. But we won it. And, you know, if you think about how great of a conference it was then in its prime, where you played everybody twice, and you had juniors and seniors that still were in college. You know, I can make the argument that it was during that period of time that may have been the most competitive conference ever in college.
Right.
You know, so for us to win the Big East regular season championship, I think we were a 2 seed in the tournament, had a really difficult loss against Vanderbilt in the second round, but I remember that Big East championship more than anything else.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's like a fast break, Sean. I mean, there's so many questions we could ask you, but we want to make sure, you know, we hit some of those highlights. So, after Pitt, like, was coaching going to be a natural transition for you as you were nearing the end of your collegiate career? Did you think that was going to be a natural transition for you?
I did, and, you know, it stems really from the questions that you guys asked me a few minutes ago about my dad, and, you know, you learn the game. Again, you grow up in a certain house in a community, and the love of the game of basketball, and me watching how he can impact young people and teach the game, that's something that I wanted to do. And then I had the additional experience of what I just referred to of being in the shoes of today's college basketball players, where, you know, that I had played, and, you know, you learn through adversity and overcoming obstacles and everything that goes into being a student athlete. So that transition made sense to me, and I'm certainly glad that I went that direction.
I'm glad you definitely went that direction as well, Sean. And I think when you talk about not having time, you're one of the most intense coaches. You show that in so many ways. A phenomenal recruiter. So once you got your first coaching job, and I'll say it. You don't have to say anything. I wanted you at Pitt. I was so disappointed because I tell you, I knew you were going to be a big time coach. I think you started out at Xavier. Is that the first coaching job you had full time head coach? Was it Xavier?
I became the head coach at Xavier after I was the assistant there for 3 years, and then, you know, I left Xavier to come here to the University of Arizona.
And how do you become such a tremendous recruiter that you can get the best players to play for you, especially when we're talking about your Arizona recruiting and stuff like that? Where did you learn all that ability to bring the right talent in?
Well, first of all, you know, you never do it alone. I've had some great coaches with me, coaching staffs at both Xavier and here at Arizona, where, you know, they do sometimes a lot more than the head coach does, but they don't get the credit that the head coach does when it goes well. But I've also been very fortunate to be at two incredible places. Xavier University, you know, there have been a lot of head coaches that have been successful there. You know, Skip Frost, Dylan, Bob Stack, Thad Mata, myself, now Chris Mack. And, you know, the common theme is if you're at an institution, at a program where people care, they support what you do, they invest in your program, you have no excuses. You can try to become the best team and program you can, and you can grow it. The University of Arizona is the same. You know, Lute Olson, he's a Hall of Fame coach who was here for more than two decades. You know, everything was set up for success, and You know, we've utilized the great tradition we have. If you look at the Golden State Warriors, you know, their head coach, Steve Kerr, is an iconic figure here at the University of Arizona. Luke Walton, who, you know, is his assistant and did a great job filling in for Steve. You know, same with Luke. Luke played here, played in a Final Four. Mm-hmm. You look at their team, you know, Andre Iguodala is one of ours. So when I talk about the tradition, not only do we have a place where people really care about our basketball program and this university, but the tradition is among the best in the nation. So when you have those things, I think, at your fingertips, it makes it a lot easier to attract future talent.
Yes.
And you know what? Of all the great recruits that I've had in the 7 years here, and now this is my 12th year as a head coach, T.J. McConnell could have been the best when you consider how productive he was for us, how many games he won in his 2 years, and just all of the qualities that he brought to the table, not just as a player but off the court. And, you know, I know he's from Pittsburgh, but, you know, that guy right there, it's just he's made us all proud. And now to watch him in the NBA, I think
makes
us
even
prouder.
Well, Sean,
I mean, he's certainly reached back.
I wanted to one more question. Sean, you must be so proud of his last game again, win with the Sixers, and how he's playing so well with the Sixers. It's great.
He is, and nothing surprises me about TJ. The only thing that surprised me is when his time ended here at Arizona, that he wasn't more well thought of towards being an NBA player. And I'm glad that he got the opportunity. And I know he'll make the most of it. I think he's coming out here this week because it's All-Star break, so it'll be nice to see him.
Great. So, I mean, you're moving close to conference championship time, Sean. So what's some thoughts as you move closer to there? I know you have some games left, but you got to be thinking tournament time also.
Yeah, we have a big weekend this weekend. We play UCLA at home on Friday, and then we play USC, who's a very, very good team, on Sunday. Both teams have beaten us on their home court in early January. And then we play Arizona State at home. So we have three home games in a row. Arizona State is a rivalry of ours, and obviously UCLA and SC, two really outstanding programs. So we have a big stretch. We're 19-5. I think, like a lot of teams in this country, we've had our great moments, and we've certainly had some moments we wish we were better. We've dealt with a lot of injuries this year, and my hope is that we can be healthy down the stretch run and maybe play our best basketball here in this month of February and March.
And I think that's the thing, Sean. This is the first year, I think, there's no real dominant team in college basketball. So the tournament is going to be where it's decided, the big dance. Because I don't see a team like a Kentucky years before, you know, that just was so dominant, you know, they didn't win it. That this year, it's wide open with so many, probably five deep in each conference has a shot at winning the national title. Wouldn't you agree?
There's a lot of parity. I think we all know the reasons. You know, you lose your best players.
Right.
Great team, and we're a great example of that. I mean, we lost Stanley Johnson, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson. They left after their freshman and sophomore years.
Yeah.
Another really good player, Brandon Ashley, left after his junior year. And, you know, the more successful you are in college basketball, the more turnover you seem to have. And, you know, that's almost backwards. So because of that, there's obviously a lot more parity now than ever before. I know it makes it exciting as it comes tournament time, but I think all of us who are in the game wish that you didn't have as much turnover as we do.
Definitely, absolutely, Coach. Any more questions? I'll have another. I have a pick question for Sean.
Your pick question in, so go ahead.
No, I wanted a Coach Calipari question, Sean. How much did you learn from Coach Cal, especially assistant and at Pitt, and specific things of just how to get along? I mean, to really be a motivator, but also really a you know, somebody that makes people feel comfortable in so many ways and excited and want to play for you. How much do you think you've taken from Coach Cal in that way?
You know, I'm very close with him, and you know, he has a gift to make people feel like you know him. You know, he just whether you meet him for the first time, or he's somebody that you knew as a long, long time ago. He makes you feel welcome. He certainly never forgets where he's from and the people mm-hmm. that have helped him along the way. You know, my dad helped him a great deal growing up, and he's stayed in touch with him really for the last, really my lifetime. But what he's done, I'm glad to see him in the Hall of Fame, very, very deserved of that. You know, one mm-hmm. of the iconic figures in college basketball, for sure.
Right. Well, we definitely wish you, lots more wins as you near the end of the regular season and going into conference play and then NCAA post play. So, you know, keep doing what you're doing and making a difference, Sean. You're making a difference. We're happy for you.
Yeah, thank you. And it's nice to talk with you because you're one of those people that have made a difference for a long, long time, especially in the inner city community in Pittsburgh. And I can remember, like it was yesterday, your role with Ozanam and just helping young kids, you know, get to school and helping them understand they had a place to go in the summer. So nobody has worked harder in that field than you, and we all remember it.
Well, appreciate that.
What would you say, last question for you, Sean, what do you want to accomplish in your coaching career? What is your ultimate goal as a coach before you retire? Especially
you know, I just focus on
career.
Trying to help the guys that are on my team and really develop. I think if you keep the compass pointed in that direction, a lot of the success will follow. I don't know how long I will coach. I think the days of guys coaching, you know, 25, 30 years as a head coach have ended because sometimes even if you want to, you're just not going to get there. There are too many things that can go against you. So I take it one day at a time and really enjoy coaching at the University of Arizona. It's a wonderful place. And I wish we were a little closer to Pittsburgh. Every once in a while, you know, you become disconnected with the time change. But I think as time moves forward, we have, as a family, gotten used to being out here. And right now I look outside. I'm almost scared to ask you guys what it looks like.
Yeah, no, it's cold.
It's cold, Sean.
You can imagine. It's 80 degrees and the brightest blue sky you could ever see. I mean, so it's completely different out here in the winter. And I think growing up in Pittsburgh, you sometimes appreciate it more than maybe some people who've always lived out here do.
All right, Sean, I know we can find – one of the funny things, Coach, we can find Coach Sean Miller on Twitter, as I see you tweet sometimes, Coach. So that's the best place we can find info on you, right, Sean?
Yeah,
on the website.
During the season, I stay away from it as much, but I'm on there. It's the way of the world, so you might as well embrace it.
Well, thanks for calling, Sean. It was an absolute honor, and hail to Pitt for sure.
Okay, great talking with you guys, and good luck.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, take care, guys. Thanks, Sean. Take care. All right, that was the Total Celebrity Show. Take care.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google+, and also on Periscope, at TotalTutor. And I'm really excited to welcome the program, star of NBC's Chicago PD, John Seda. John, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you, first of all, because I think we have like a little bit of a kind of relationship in certain ways, because I always consider I was a former professional wrestler. You were a former boxer. Think of the cauliflower ear club and all those different things. I think of pro wrestlers and boxers in this, the same knit in so many ways. Wouldn't you agree?
It's the brotherhood, man. It's great.
Exactly. And so how many years did you box, John?
No, I fought a few years, but it was amateur. I say it was like a small pace. You know, I got to fight in the New Jersey Golden Gloves and took runner up in that. But you know, I just really loved the experience of it. And, you know, I, like, you know, as a wrestler, you know, it's, it, it's basically one-on-one, and you know, so I just kind of love that kind of competition.
Well, especially because mine was more the entertainment WWE type thing, but still we get beat up pretty bad. Anytime you're in a ring and with a crowd, it's just amazing, just a live crowd, how to deal with a live crowd, right? That's huge. It's exciting.
Yeah.
All right.
I wanted to do it. I wanted to be a boxer, but I'll take, I'm not complaining that I ended up being on.
Yeah, with your success, for sure. Selena, now, it's kind of interesting, your story. I was watching another one of your interviews. You started on Chicago Fire before Chicago PD, and that's a different type of situation, isn't it, John?
Yeah. That's rare that happens, where they'll take a character from one show and spin them off into a new show, and then, you know, both being successful. It's rare that happens, so it's pretty incredible, and to then see it happen again with Chicago Med is pretty great. You know, NBC and Dick Wolf, this is one great big family to be a part of.
Most definitely, for sure. And now you play Antonio Dawson in the intelligence unit in Chicago PD. Tell us a little bit about that character.
Yeah, Antonio, he's a guy that just, you know, really, really loves his job, and you know, really wants to do the best for his city, and wants to do the best in protecting, you know, those out there, and just, you know, he's a family man, and you know, he's someone who's really honest and loyal, and you know, tries to make sure lines aren't crossed, and you know, and tries to do things by the book. But yet, he's also a tough guy who,
right.
You know, has been on the job for a while and knows the streets, and you know, he's just a guy who really just wants to get the job done, and in the right way, though.
Oh, definitely, and I think that this is a great role for you, looking at Chicago Fire, then Chicago PD, about the people that are forgotten, to be acting in that position for how they protect our lives every day. It must be a tremendous honor to play a role like that.
Oh, yeah, there's no greater compliment than hearing, you know, a police officer come up to me and say, hey, man, you're getting it right, you guys are getting it right. You know, just all the technical aspects to, you know, let alone our, you know, our storylines and stuff, just from a tactical standpoint, and you know, portraying a police officer with, you know, with the look and feel. You know, it's Hollywood, and you know, you got to have some Hollywood in there. But at the end of the day, we take it serious. We have a technical advisor in Brian Luch, you know, who's there every day, and you know, and there are no dumb questions. You know, we go up to him and we'll ask him every single thing and say, look, is this right? Would this be done by a police officer? Would you do this? Would you do that? He's always there to try to make sure we're getting it as close to, you know, the way it's actually done the best we can. So that's always a great,
definitely,
you know, thing to hear. And for the most part, they've been very supportive.
Now, John, very interesting crossover Wednesday night, February 10th at 9 p.m. Eastern. You're going to cross over again to Law & Order SVU, and that's pretty interesting. And I love the storyline, because it always the SVU cases kind of go into specific things that did happen. So tell us a little bit about that episode that you're going to cross over into, and then back to Chicago PD, and the SVU kind of does their crossover.
Yeah, it's great to see these two shows cross over with each other. You know, for us as actors, it's always great to have a chance to work with people that we admire and we respect. And,
right.
You know, Mariska Hargitay and, you know, Ice-T, they've been at it for a while now, going into their 18th season next year. You know, so to be able to have both casts kind of meet and mix up with each other is always great. And this is a story that is a continuation, kind of, sort of, where Dallas Roberts, who plays Yates, and he does a phenomenal job playing this really shady character. you know, unfortunately, we have to deal with him again And it's it's going to really take a lot from the Chicago side and the New York side to deal with this case.
Yeah, think about it. Again, any escape prisoners who are murderers, we all get nervous. You have to kind of shut down street blocks or different places or communities when this thing happens. So it's so real, the two shows, to look at those specific situations and stuff. And then, then it goes from the SCU, goes to cross over to Chicago PD, where, the process is that the Yates makes a decision to head to possibly Chicago, right? And that's where people definitely have to tune in to see what happens next.
Right. It starts off on Law and Order, and right afterwards it'll continue on to Chicago PD. It is, and it's something that that's what's so unique about these shows, that in real life, those things happen where one city might need another city's help, or one state might need another state's help. And, I think being able to actually do that and portray that, it really is fortunate for us.
Okay, best place to find information on you, John, again, Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern to 10 p.m., Law & Order SVU, and then 10 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Eastern, Chicago PD. Best place to find info on you? Where can we go?
That's right. It's great to... for the fans that are loyal to Law and Order, if there's some that haven't seen Chicago PD yet or vice versa, this is a great opportunity to be able to catch both shows. And I think they'll be well entertained.
And I was going to say, John, is there a place you find information on you? Could we follow you on Twitter, different places to connect with you? Where can we go?
Oh, yeah. I'm on Twitter. My name, at John Seda. I'm also on Instagram as well.
Well, best of luck. Always like to talk to the brotherhood of boxing and wrestling connected, and continued success with the show. And it's very interesting what NBC's doing, and these real life dramas. That's what people want to watch, especially with the hard times and difficulties that people go through every day. So thanks for calling, John, and best of luck.
There you go. Thank you so much.
Take care. Okay. Bye-bye. All right. That was a Total Celebrity Show. Take care, guys. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information, and you also can check me out on Twitter at TotalTutor and Neil S. Haley Facebook. And I'm excited to welcome this guest to the line. Really going to have a great conversation. A lot of things to speak about today about the new film he's in, so I'm excited to welcome the program from Orange is the New Black and also Weeds, Michael Harney. Michael, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Michael. Let's kind of go into, for one question regarding Orange is the New Black. I mean, to be on this show and see the success, and especially a different platform like it is, must be really exciting for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a wonderful show. The writing is really wonderful, and we're able to kind of bring forth the lives of people that are incarcerated, which really is a forgotten population in many respects, so it's very meaningful for us as artists.
Yeah, it definitely, that's so true, Michael, and it shows a different life and different what happens when things really get real. Isn't that correct? Especially the role you play.
Everybody's life. It's not just the role of the inmates. It's all the lives that are really kind of connected in this environment, the Litchfield, Litchfield and beyond. I think it's kind of cool because it kind of puts things out there in a way that people are able to identify with. The different life paths of all these people that are working in the prison, having to do visiting the prison. I mean, there's everything. The utilization of backstory by Genji and the writers is a device that I think is being used in a really wonderful way to movies.
Right.
You know, people say to me, hey, you know, I don't feel too distant from these people. You know, I feel like I can identify with them.
It definitely shows you that life. And now the film you're in, Bad Hurt, I talked to Johnny Whitworth about it. So we had a really good conversation about his role in the show last week. So I'm pretty much caught up a lot on Bad Hurt in certain ways. But again, when you add PTSD and mental illness to something, it just really is a tragic story, isn't it? In certain ways, Michael, for sure.
Yes. In our country. I think that this is something that's going to reach a lot of people and give them an opportunity to say, oh, somebody finally decided to do something about us. You know, somebody finally decided to give us voice. And I think Mark has done that, Mark Kimball, in encapsulating 23 years of his own personal life into two or three days.
Yeah, most definitely. And when you, like you touched upon specifically your character, you were from the Vietnam War and, you know, trying to raise a traditional type family and things just haven't gone well in your family at certain things, correct?
Yeah, I play sort of a guy who's, the idea that I had, I came up with through my discussions with the director, Mark Kimball, is that, because my character is based on his dad in real life, and he used to say that his dad was a knight of infinite resignation.
Yeah. And, oh, my.
So that was sort of the idea that I had that became a through line of my experiences in the film.
And talking about the special needs person in this film, talk a little bit about that character for us, especially because, again, I'm an advocate for special needs children. I'm an educational advocate, and I look at specifically what's happening to them, how they're pushed aside in society, just like PTSD as well. But I didn't hear a lot about that in the last interview I had promoting the film. So tell me about that.
Well, Aditi, plays my daughter in the film, played beautifully, wonderfully by Iris Gulag. She's just a tremendous actress. It's really, this is, my experience of kids on the spectrum or kids who are developmentally delayed or kids that are having trouble. We're dealing with people.
Yes.
And our society, and any society usually, I think, for the most part, is not really geared to deal with it. Because everybody, especially in our culture, they're so busy doing their life and preparing, mainstream experience.
Exactly.
For themselves and for their children. So anybody that's outside the box, we have to create our own pathways. Now, that being said, there are systemic supports that are available. There are many wonderful
yes.
programs and wonderful situations, people working for the betterment of that community. However, there is a private challenge that exists for families challenges that families have to immerse themselves in. And frankly, just the decision to keep going.
Yes.